Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studio where you'll hear a conversation about presentation design, strategies, tips, and tricks, running a design studio, and more. Here are your hosts from inside the design studio, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, Inc., based in Southern California, where I lead a 9-person design team specializing in executive presentations at live stage events and have been awarded as a Microsoft MVP for PowerPoint since 2004.
Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey. We're a boutique visual communications firm specializing in presentation design, data visualization, and training. And I've been a Microsoft MVP since 2014.
And I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Green Bay, Wisconsin. As a certified woman-owned business enterprise, I work with individuals and companies across the globe to ensure that they PowerPoint responsibly. And I've been a Microsoft PowerPoint MVP since 2008.
Okay, presentation design is a conversation between designer and presenter. Receiving input from the presenter is vital, but how best do you do that? Today, we're talking about and sharing our best practices for getting client feedback and input throughout the design process, along with what format we send proofs in, and some stories about why proofing and feedback is important. So I want to start off with a quick little tangent, if that's okay. So if you listen to the previous episode on PowerPoint 2016, I made a few comments about how much Microsoft is hurting me, I think everybody, by changing the spacing of the QAT buttons and basically making me lop off almost a dozen buttons that make me faster. They're just really good things. They're gone because of the incredible wide spacing that was put in place. Well, the QAT sizing is back. Not only is it back, it's back to the PowerPoint 2010 setup. And that's huge because that was the smallest. So there was a lot of happiness throughout the entire TLC studio. So thank you, Microsoft.
You know what? I have to add, I want to say thank you for recommending that people go to your PowerPoint blog site because your QAT is available on your blog, and I downloaded it because I was too lazy to set up my own on a new computer that I had. So thank you for that.
Oh, fantastic. That's yay. Success story.
My QAT is on my website as well, Sandy.
Okay. I'm
a little hurt you didn't take mine, but
well, speak up. I'll
you
take
have
two, it.
You have multiple computers. You can have one of each.
There you go.
Wait, Mac. You're Mac-based, QAT, it doesn't exist right now.
Oh, well, that's true. No, I do have a QAT up there. It's for Windows only at this point.
Yes. Okay, sorry for the tangent. I think it's good to give props to a company like Microsoft that does react from input from their users. And there was a lot of reaction to this whole thing. And it's great. They're at this point, I think they're doing really good. So back to our regularly scheduled program. For every one of our projects, every one of our favorite projects, it involved receiving feedback from someone along the way. So the first topic or question is, how do you work with a client to receive feedback? Nolan, what about you? How do you go for it?
Well, for me, it largely depends on the client and the type of work. Branding and identity is very different from presentation. I'll come back to that in a second, but focusing on presentation, some of my clients I've been with for over a decade, and we have a really nice shorthand. They know my style. I know what they need. So sometimes there's actually very little back and forth, and I like that. I'm also, fortunate enough, I can, to an extent, pick and choose some clients. So I definitely like to work with the nice ones and continue to work with those. But sort of on an everyday level, with people I've worked before, I usually send out PowerPoint files, for a few practical and philosophical reasons. I'm really adamant about making certain that my clients can make edits on their own, and I encourage it. I know a lot of people, and I know you guys probably send out PDFs a lot, but I like getting that back and forth. PowerPoint's a really good democratic double-edged sword for non-designers. It allows them to, it allows non-designers to create and edit things. Yeah, sometimes they can screw up what you've done, but I want things to be that way. I design everything so it's editable up to the last moment. So when they're in the conference room, at the last minute, they need to change a number, they need to change a color or a logo, they can do it. Things aren't locked down in Photoshop or images like that. So I really try to have everything be editable. And right from the beginning, I like my clients to actually be a part of that content writing process, because the content writing process continues, you know, up until the last second.
I've had it happen after the meeting, the content process continue.
When they realize they presented something wrong and they need to change it?
Usually, yeah. So I tend to go, you know, we should have a discussion at some point about what it was like in the old days slide design and you know, 35 millimeter, even if you were designing on a computer, you know, a rush was 3 days. For feedback, I tend to go with PDFs. Most of my interaction is remote. I don't get the opportunity to sit face to face with people, at least in the initial stages. There are clients that we've had for years that that we've never met face to face. The PDF assures the client sees things as they're designed, so there's no font issues, there's no rendering issues, things like widescreen slides somehow being put into a 4:3 aspect ratio. It happens. I'm not sure how to this day. But if we can use a PDF comments feature as well, it's a great feedback tool. That's my starting point, at least for the conversation and where we start with, especially new clients.
I have a question about sending PDFs for you, Troy. There is in PowerPoint 2016, the option to send as a PDF for tracking.
You know, I actually don't utilize that.
Okay.
And I would have to, I was going to make a comment a little bit later in kind of like my notes that PowerPoint's commenting feature has really improved. And I think a lot of it was modeled on what Adobe does with their PDF comments. It's a really streamlined process. I would imagine that it's more along those lines. The dilemma is that while comments work all the way back to PowerPoint 2003, the experience is different. So if we have a client on 2010 or 2013, I think is where they changed it. But anyways, they don't get the same experience, and it's kind of a little more of a clunky interface. I think in the newest version, it's really good. And I have a couple of clients, that's how they work. But again, that's sending them an editable file, which I'll talk about more. I like to get that. I know what you're seeing. I know it's simple, and it's a very small emailable file. So PDFs are where we start.
Okay. I haven't tried it either. And that's probably because I don't use PDFs. I'm more like Nolan in that I welcome that interaction using the PowerPoint tool. But the way I get around potential issues is I rarely even send a first round presentation or template to a client without talking to them or presenting it to them first. And I think that comes from my ad agency background. When we delivered creative, we were there and we provided rationale for our approach. And we presented it in such a way that by the time we got to the end of the presentation, they loved it as much as we do. So I rarely send a first round presentation to a client. We work all over the world. We use screen sharing, like GoToMeeting, Zoom, JoinMe, that sort of thing. We demonstrate what the presentation should look like. So by the time they get it, they have expectations. And if there's anything weird, they'll say they know that that's not what I presented to them. However, if I know that they're on a weird platform like Mac 2008, I will always send a PDF because it does not communicate well.
Sandy, I mean, what you're talking about is presenting your own work. And that's what graphic designers are taught, you know, day one in design school. And I think there definitely are times where I do that, and I think it's appropriate. The worst thing is to send something and then have all those conversations and have all the misinterpretations and have all the people you never talk to, you know, start giving comments when you can't explain the reasons for it. I mean, obviously, you try to get a lot of that up front and say, you know, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do this X, Y, and Z. But there are definitely some situations where I'll take your approach. You know, it's a new client, if they've asked something very specific and they don't seem to really understand what they want at the same time, you know, it really helps to walk them through and say, okay, now I know, for example, the template may look like a blank screen, but that's because X, Y, and Z and of these other slides, and, you know, make sure you're actually looking at it in slideshow mode.
Yeah, there's
that
a big
huge.
One. That's right. Yes. You know, let me insert one into our little conversation here, because maybe we should define how each of us, how do I want to say this? How each of us treats or works with a brand new client versus one of those long-term clients, Nolan, where you had the term, you know, shorthand, which I'm going to steal because that's a great reason or explanation of why working with a long-term client is just so much easier. So What is your difference, Nolan, between a brand new client and somebody that you've worked with for, you know, 3-4+ years ongoing?
New clients have to pay up front. I'm only half joking on that. If it is a new client, very often I will ask for 50% up front. You never know.
Okay, going back to the topic, we're not. proofing. How do you communicate with them? What are your expectations? What are their expectations? How do you go about that? Is there a difference?
I don't know if there's a huge difference. I mean, again, with new clients, if I'm, you know, worried about who's on their end, giving notes and everything, I might sort of walk them through something on the phone. Yeah, I don't know if I, again, it's probably more on the managing expectations just from a business perspective with new clients versus old ones. You know, with new clients, this also gets down to really, if you're going to do a project sort of rate, and sorry to bring it back to money, but you really need a clear scope of work. And with new clients, with presentation in general, it's just sometimes hard to do that. And I, more often than not, will go to hourly a lot of times with new clients because I just don't know how much back and forth that new client wants. I don't know if that client's going to be happy after the first round or only happy after the 20th round. So for me, a lot of times I'll say, let's just do hourly. Let's go about this bit by bit. And look, if it ends up being 20 hours, great. If it ends up being 100 hours, you know, it's hourly.
Awesome. Yeah, let's have a one on project scope and project creep.
That's a separate topic.
Episode. Yeah, that's another one. Sandy, how do you treat new versus existing clients when it comes to that getting proofing, getting feedback cycle?
Sure. Definitely, as I described earlier, I'm presenting my design. I have many long-term clients, however, that I continue to educate. For example, a large healthcare client. I think we've been together for 6, 7, 8 years. I can't remember, but they'll come to me with a new project. Oftentimes they'll send me what they have existing. And when they ask for something, it's not necessarily what I think is what they need. So it comes back to, I do the work, I give them what they ask for, and then I show them what I think it should be. So again, we're on GoToMeeting, join me, and I'm walking through and rationalizing the design.
So Troy, you said you send PDFs a lot. Is there any point where you'll finally release that actual file? I mean, where you're in your workflow, you're like, okay, now you can have it.
Yeah, my policy is in general, you know, you get an editable file after everything's approved visually. So PDF proofs are the standard process because nothing's editable there. But there is a huge difference between template projects and presentation projects, which we can talk about a little bit later. But the type of project also dictates it. If it's a new client versus an old client, so we kind of know what their expectations are. And that's kind of where it's going. As a new client, you really don't know. You haven't built up that communication and knowledge, understanding of their design preferences, their corporate style guide and implementation of it. So a lot of it's just, you know, some of it's kind of feeling things out and getting to the point where you're comfortable or confident that your design is going to match the needs and expectations. So
you ever send video instead of a PDF?
Video export. Well, do you?
Not really.
I do all the time, especially now with Morph coming into play. Not everybody's on PowerPoint 2016. So if you're working with that capability, it won't translate on older versions of PowerPoint. So video is very important.
So Morph doesn't show up on 2013 or Mac or anything else that doesn't natively support it?
No.
Not yet. We were just testing this because we're using it. We're using this incredible animation that would have been easily 40 hours of one of the designers developing, and we did it all in a couple of days, but it's all through Morph, but the client couldn't view it. We went and tested it on PowerPoint 2013. My understanding is that it will be backwards viewable or, you know, backwards compatible for viewing. So we'll wait and see. Maybe it'll be one of those updates that'll pop up.
I don't do a whole lot of animation these days. So videos, big deal.
Yeah. You know what? Maybe if I do a video, it's maybe just a few slides where I want input on an animation sequence. So, video export is there. And We should probably have another talk, but have you ever heard of Whipster or Hightail? Has a new thing called Spaces. It's all video proofing online. They're both awesome. Sandy, you might want to look into these. You basically upload the video and you give the client a link, and you have a choice on both of them if they get a download option. Whipster is probably a little more clear on that, but I think Spaces, it's brand new. As they're watching the video, they can hit pause, and just like Adobe or PowerPoint comments, they can literally draw a marquee around the area they're concerned with, type in a comment, and then hit continue playing. When you get it back, you can jump to each one of their comments and see where they had a question. It's cool. So if you do a video export, and it's a back and forth, a lot of times we'll do a video export and I'll use the comments. I'll actually basically add comments before I even give it to the client to look at with, hey, this is the new morph animation you're seeing. You won't be able to view it. That's why we're giving you a video, but notice how this is very After Effects like, and in the way it works. And you know, we're doing this all within PowerPoint. You got to go to the PowerPoint blog. I had all the design team make some morph examples. There's a video on there that shows some pretty awesome stuff that one of the designers actually recreated one of the animations in After Effects, and they're up there kind of as a blind test. Which one is After Effects? Which one is PowerPoint? It's really cool when you turn it over.
That is really great. You need to get that out on social media. I'll get it out on social media for you.
Yeah, we're working on that whole thing. Okay. Well, how about the exact opposite of it? Do either of you send just images of slides?
Not really. I mean, if I'm going to do that, I'll probably just go to PDF. But you can turn a whole PowerPoint file into flat JPEGs, right?
Yeah, with the save as options.
Well, you can do that with saving out as, it'll save out individual JPEGs. But there's a way to actually take a whole PowerPoint file and immediately convert it to where every slide is just a JPEG of that content.
Yeah, it's actually a Rick Bretschneider feature, and it's save as picture slideshow, I believe.
Something like that, yeah.
And I've used that in the past, but it's very cool. So I'm actually not talking about a folder full of JPEGs for me anyways. A lot of times it's like the video. I'm going to send a animation sequence. A lot of times I find that I'm doing one slide or a couple of slides, or maybe it's actually a screen capture of the slide sorter so that I get some specific feedback.
Oh, I see.
I use Snagit like all the time. Instead of exporting it, I just do a quick snag of the slide, but then I get to mark it up on there, arrow pointing here, a box, a little question, you know, saying, hey, this medical term, I'm not in, you know, I work in with you, but I don't know this medical term. Is this one correct? Or, hey, this drug formula is different than the way I've seen it in the past. So an image just makes it really fast. You know, I just drop it in the email and I get feedback on that one thing. I don't have to explain it. They can look at it and give me feedback. That's how I use images.
No, that's cool. I haven't thought of that. Yeah, come to think of it, I have, again, I use the snipping tool. I don't use Snagit as much, and I feel like I'm missing out on something because all of my colleagues use it regularly. But I'll use the...
I don't use it.
Thank you. I feel better.
It's available on the Mac, Windows, Linux.
I have it on my computer.
For those quick, I do, like I'll take I'll use a snippet tool and take a quick shot and pop it in an email for a client to react to. I see what you're talking about. I do use that.
Yeah, react to, that's it. I just want a reaction to one little thing. And sometimes I think the coolest one is when you put it in slide sorter and you capture like a sequence of six slides and go, is this the right order for the build? Maybe it's because as I read it, the story doesn't seem to flow. It seems like they're kind of going backwards, and it gives people a chance to kind of rethink it and say, yes, that's absolutely it. Or, hey, I think I would like it to do this. So just another way of doing it.
Do you use any sort of the authoring tools or co-authoring tools with your clients?
You mean like the shared sessions where you can jointly view?
I know they exist. I just don't use them. I don't know too much about them.
I will use co-authoring for a slide review, not to the same level that Sandy does. I think she's got she's definitely got that down. But it's not necessarily, I don't use it as co-authoring. It's not necessarily for the client to also be able to update slides. I do it just more as a direct feedback.
Just to take
notes. Oftentimes I'll do the updates and they can say, and then, you know, it translates over to their version they're looking at really fast. I mean, the co-authoring has gotten pretty cool within PowerPoint itself. Not to say I use it a lot, but it's pretty cool for them to see it. But I don't actually let them take control of the presentation. I try to avoid that. It's almost a version control thing there as well.
Well, I'm like you, Troy. Well, first of all, I agree that Office has tremendously improved with the co-authoring tool, but I'm not in the habit of using it. I'd rather have a meeting, I go to meeting or join me again. And if they need to, I'll give them mouse control.
I think it's all about control and I just can't give it up.
Yeah, I wouldn't give a client the mouse.
Oh, it's not like they're going to ruin anything.
That's why they're save as. Yes. But no, the whole idea of co-authoring being like a join me or a go to meeting, you know, getting that feedback, you know, you're having more of a direct conversation where I don't do that as much. I think it's going to become more and more vital as it becomes more maybe mobile friendly, but it's not a huge part of the workflow.
I like email, partly because I'm socially awkward. I just like to keep people at an arm's length through email. But I have different time zone clients too. And of course, they always email back their notes at 6:01 my time. And I'm like, great. Tried to leave the office. Hey, so what I want to ask you guys sort of a philosophical thing, because this is a big thing in sort of the graphic design world and you know, maybe to a lesser extent in presentation specifically. But what are your thoughts about providing multiple design options to clients in the beginning? Because a lot of times we'll get, you know, the request, hey, can we see three design options? And then we'll choose one and then you'll run with it. And I have a very strong feeling about that, but I want to know what you guys think.
I'll provide multiple concepts for template designs sometimes, and that all depends on how closely aligned it needs to be with other materials like a website. On the other hand, I always provide multiple options when a client insists on doing something that I don't necessarily agree with. And I mentioned this earlier, without arguing, when a client asks me to do something, I'll usually do it. I'll interpret it the way they want me to, and then I will make a suggestion for a different approach. And that's I have good. To tell you, 99% of the time, they get it and they'll go with what I've suggested.
That's good.
I think that's our next topic, you know, how and when to hire a design professional and what they bring to the table.
What about you, Troy? Multiple options?
Like Sandy, for template projects, it's a definite there are multiple concepts. This gives us, meaning the designer, feedbacks on likes and dislikes, because those are just as important, especially when establishing that long-term ongoing relationship. So you kind of end up with that shorthand of knowing what they want. So those first designs come through. And it also gives the client control over their project. They feel like they're making the selection, but it's within boundaries. It's within good design boundaries. So that's really important. So I think, and you know, I should say these are true concepts. I mean, they're just mockups. There is nothing actually usable at this stage. They're not a real template. They're just a, hey, here's what the template could look like. Let me know. So there's not a ton of time invested in them, enough to make it, you know, stylized and conceptual. And it also becomes kind of a contest in our studio. It's really fun. Generally, every template is assigned to three designers and then we see who the client selects and is the winner. So it's kind of become part of our working, our workflow as well. Now, when it comes to slide design, I'm definitely less on offering multiple options. When there's an interpretation of the message, just like Sandy was saying, I'll often do a few options just to show how the visual story may be different than the presentation story, because I want to ensure both the presenter and the speaker support are aligned. And that's because a lot of our work is based on scripts. We get handed a script here, make a presentation for this executive. You know, we don't get any backstory. We don't get a lot of that interaction time. And sometimes the scribbled notes don't match to what we're reading. So in that case, multiple options, but no, we kind of go with we're the designer and that professional design is good.
This is what we think is best. And we'll explain to you why we think it's best and based on our research and right?
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So Nolan, your strong philosophy, let's hear it.
All right. If I'm doing branding and identity, yes, you will get multiple options. You know, you won't get 1,000, but you know, we're still gonna do lots of research and all that stuff. But when it comes to templates and or presentation design, and I'll also say I don't do a ton of template design, but I'm really of the philosophy, and this is maybe just my own personality, I'm going to give you one design. I'm going to research. I'm going to talk to you. I'm going to, you know, use all everything that I think is right and know is right, and I will present you the best option. And if it's wrong, we will talk about it, and I'll do another option, or we'll change it, we'll tweak it. And if it ends up being 100 options till we get it right, that's, you know, that's what we'll do. And that's what I say in the beginning, but, you know, usually that first option is right. I'm not going to, you know, I don't like to go through 100 rounds, but I do tell the client, look, we'll keep working on it till it's correct. My last sort of real big job was at an agency in-house, and we would always get that request for multiple designs. And we had a thin design department. We had limited time. That was three times the amount of work. And then we would throw 2/3 of it away. And I finally said, look, we're not doing this. Like, we don't have the time. We don't have the bandwidth. And to just do design exercises internally to sort of try to appease some VP. So we do what we think is right. With that sort of one option based on everything we're doing. Now, again, there are some exceptions to that. If a client says, I want three options, absolutely has to be, I'll say, okay, well, it's going to cost more because it's more, you know, work on our part. That's the other thing. It saves the client money from my perspective. There's a, you know, the designer Paul Rand? Paul Rand was one of the probably most famous graphic identity designers. I think he did the IBM logo and everything. And I always remember this story. Steve Jobs, after he left Apple the first time, he founded Next, that short-lived computer company.
I worked on a Next computer.
You did? Wow, that big black box or dark gray box.
But it had an awesome logo, so I'm looking forward to the story.
It had this really cool like 3D cube logo. And the story behind it is Steve Jobs, you know, set up his own shop and said, I need a logo. He went to Paul Rand, who was the best in the business, who was kind of in semi-retirement at the time. But he said, Paul, I want a logo. And I said, you know, I want some options and blah, blah, blah. And Paul said, no. It will cost $100,000. You pay me $100,000. I will give you one option that I think is the best for your solution. You don't like it? Don't use it. You like it? Use it. That's it. That's all I'm offering. And Steve Jobs said, okay. And that was it. And he got the logo. It worked. Instead of going through, you know, dozens and dozens of options and rounds and everything, Paul Rand knew what he was talking about and he did it and it worked. So that's my philosophy that I kind of try to fall back on a lot.
Well, I think it's good. Having an ad agency background, we always presented two or three concepts.
Yeah. And it's totally different. And you know, if you're doing a big ad campaign and, you know, there are definitely issues. But the other thing is too, when you guys present three options to a client and you give them the full choice,
yes,
don't they pick the worst one?
Exactly.
They always pick the worst one. And like when you're doing identity, this is the really bad thing. Like if you're doing,
why are you designing a bad one?
No, here's what, because it's the less good one. Let me put it that way. Oh. But if you like invariably, if you're doing like logos, for example, and you give them, you know, five and you narrow it down yourself, you know, you start with hundreds of ideas and you get it down to five. And at the last minute, you're like, oh, here's this other idea. Well, that could work. Let me just throw that in there. It's not that great, but I just want to give them options. They pick that one. And then you're stuck with it.
Yes. Going back to template, because template is where this really does. It's a mix and match. Hey, because I make sure every concept uses different. Now, provided there's not a style guide we're following, but different fonts, different color schemes, different logo usage. You know, so it becomes a little bit of a mix and match. Again, I'm looking for that likes and dislikes. Not so much with long-term ongoing clients where we know things.
And again, I'm not saying it's bad, but in your case, you said you have three designers working on it. Well, the client's paying for that, right?
And it's built into the project estimate.
And
yes,
if that's what they want, great. You know, if they want to go to four different agencies and get four different ideas, they can pay for it.
Well, we don't encourage that, but but no, it is built in. Yeah, we have a design, and that's why they're mock-ups. They're not full featured, and you know everything else. Great philosophy question. Could I have a little Zen music play on the podcast? Let's just go open forum talk about any other topics, options, pros and cons of proofing and any tips before we wrap up, because I know there's things that we haven't covered and we'll just kind of throw things out there.
Sandy, you reminded me of this when you were talking about, you know, giving the client your preference, even when they disagree and usually they go with it. Here's just a small thing I do. If I'm not tasked with rewriting content, like the story part of it, if they're like, no, content is what it is, it's approved, it's locked. If I see a sentence that's just jargon or overwritten and I just can't help myself, what I'll do is I'll take whatever that text box is or whatever and put it onto the pasteboard to the right and then rewrite it the way I think it should be. Again, even if I'm not kind of being paid for that. And then I'll say, and I'll show it to them and say, you know, I changed some of the wording. I know you told me not to. If you don't like it, the original is right off to the side. You can put it back. I'll put it back. But if you think, you know, my change was better, it's there. And again, 99% of the time, they're like, oh, yeah, we can say that in fewer words.
You know what? That's a good point. I do a similar approach. I will take the old slide content that I don't agree with, put it in the speaker's notes so they can reference it, and then let them know it's there, but make my recommendation for the slide. So what they get is what I recommend.
Okay. Our next episode is so much going to be how and why to use a design professional, because it's more than making things pretty, because we do content management is what we, you know, what I call it all the time. Okay. Oh, no, I know, Nolan, you use Prezi because you mentioned it and we've talked about before. How do you send a Prezi proof?
Well, first of all, I don't think I've done Prezi in well over a year, to be perfectly honest.
Okay.
It's on its way out for me. I mean, it's not that I wouldn't do it. I just, honestly, my clients have just not been wanting it. So, a Prezi proof is you just have a link. I mean, it couldn't be easier. You just send them the current link and that's it.
Did you know, and this one comes up all the time, because I don't do much Prezi work anymore. It's definitely there. I don't think it'll fully go away, although Morph and some other tools coming online, its visual styling is easier to replicate in other programs. I still like the big canvas idea, but Prezi does have the ability to export a PDF proof, which is basically each zoomed in level. And it's really a buried feature, and I use it a lot.
Yeah, unfortunately, they rasterize things unless they've changed it.
Yeah. So. No, I didn't say it was good quality. I just said it makes the storyline so everybody could see the order of things. It's a good feature to use. So for me, it's PDF. I mentioned them earlier, but PDF comments are my preferred feedback tool. Send slides and then let people use the PDF commenting where they can actually pin it to if it's a word or an image, and they make their little comment, comes back. But it's kind of visual. You can see where they're looking at it. It becomes an action checklist, you know, that we can all go through, but it's also printable. Yeah. So you can just
PDF comments are really good. I usually use that just with InDesign work with clients, but yeah, you can definitely do it in PowerPoint.
Yeah.
Just hearing you talk about it, you're very convincing.
On the other hand, you're wrong, Troy.
On the other hand, no, the other tool I don't use a lot of, because you'll remember, I'd rather have that face-to-face, that in-person conversation. The PowerPoint comments have improved so much, and it's just a matter of educating my clients to use them more and more and creating expectations.
I still like my yellow text boxes, my yellow free-floating text boxes, but you're right, comments have gotten much better.
I do that too.
We do green.
You do green?
We have green note boxes. It's just, hey, there's a green box on there.
It's in your face. You can't miss it.
Neon green, black text. I have a funny story about that, total tangent, as I started the whole thing. That worked really well up until the time we were doing the Green Lantern.
Well, I was going to say, you use green.
Yeah.
Or sometimes I use hot pink too.
No, we have too much Barbie work. That conflicts. Anyways, green boxes are great. And we sent them all out on one presentation and suddenly realized nobody can tell where the comments are. So we went to yellow, ironically, Nolan. There we are. Go. We're in alignment.
Black over yellow. It's highly visible.
I think somebody already mentioned this, but internally we call it client education, and that's, you know, developing that smooth working relationship. It's not always easy. And another reason why a long-term presentation professional is great, because they know the working, like version control. Who's actually in control of this slide deck? When you do release it, are they allowed to make edits? Can we keep working on it? How many times do you get it back? Like, here, I made comments to the version 2. You know, I made all my changes to the one you sent me, but that's now the old version. And now we've got to, anyways. So client education, I think we mentioned that term, but it's something we we talk about a lot.
Relationship building.
That's probably a nicer way to say it. Okay, so we'll wrap this one up by saying feedback is critical in the presentation design process. Working out how you get your feedback from your client is also critical, because there are a lot of options available, and it's at what stages of the design process do you require feedback? Is the client willing to give feedback? How are your proofs sent out? And what is the feedback? Is it written comments? Is it a phone call? Is it actually giving the presentation and saying, make changes? I personally do all of those, but at different stages and with different clients. Being a presentation design professional, as we were just saying, it's more than just the visual design. It's managing the process, which includes sending out proofs. That's a big part of the process.
I agree. No matter what approach you end up using, it's just make sure that there's an agreement up front with your client.
And a contract.
We'll put that on the list for future. Sorry. Actually, I really think that's really big.
Welcome back to money with me.
We'll talk about agreements later, but I think they're more than about money. They're about making sure there's understanding. Okay, we each have another round of tips and tricks about our favorite presentation design tip for this segment here. Pro tips.
Okay. Mine is sample colors from your imagery to use in your presentation. For example, you've got a full screen image and you want to place a title over it. Don't just randomly pick a color. Use a contrast color from that image for your text. And you can do that in the newer versions of PowerPoint by using the eyedropper tool. So you can literally, let's say you've got a green image and there's a little bit of yellow in it. You can sample that yellow, get the color value, and then make your text that. If you kind of really want to take it further, you can actually use an image to create a whole color palette for your presentation. And a really easy way to do that is there's a site called Pictaculous. You upload an image, it does its magic, and it spits out a color palette based on that color. So, for example, let's say you're doing a presentation on race car driving, and you've got the sponsored car, and it's all these specific colors. Upload that image, it'll spit out colors you can use. That you can set as your color palette.
Awesome. Does it let you do...
It'll be in the show notes.
Okay, we'll add that. Absolutely. Really quick, how many colors can it do? Can it do like a color scheme set? Can you set it to do 6?
I don't know. It doesn't give you I think it gives you 4 or 5. I don't know. I can do it right now.
That's the thing I found with a lot of the color creation tools. They don't give you... Because PowerPoint has 6 options. Accent colors plus your primaries, light darks.
I think it does. I think it gives you 4.
Okay. Have to check that out. So my presentation pro tip is all about viewing a PowerPoint slide deck on a mobile device. Assuming you have installed Microsoft's PowerPoint for your phone or tablet, it's not always the app that opens a file. So on an iPhone, if you receive an email with a presentation attached, if you just click it, after you click it and download, if you click it to view it, it's going to open up in the Apple default iOS PowerPoint viewer thing. And things like SmartArt generally are bad. They don't work. But if you click and hold, so here's the tip part of it. If you click and hold on that icon on Android or iOS, it'll pop up basically a menu of all your options you have installed to open it with. And if you use the actual Microsoft iOS PowerPoint, it's a pretty amazing preview thing. I mean, I do it all the time because I'm reviewing proofs while I'm on the road. And that's my go-to because it just makes things actually render really well.
Well, and my pro tip is the use of merge shapes. Everyone is aware of how icons are being used in every form of communication, from websites to brochures to street signs. And PowerPoint has that capability built into it. It's hidden in older versions of PowerPoint. I think even 2010, you have to find it in the backstage. But 2013, 2016, it's on your
format
tab. And it's just an amazing, amazing tool that I would encourage everyone to use.
First of all, the PowerPoint 2010, you have to add it to your toolbar or your QAT, and it's not the full features that are available now. I think it was like slid in there, like, hey, we got these new tools, but they're not quite good enough to let everybody know about yet.
There was debate whether they should release it. And the compromise was, well, we'll release it. We'll hide it though.
That's totally what it felt like, but they're great. So I call them Illustrator. Well, now I should say 2.0. I used to say 1.0 because they're basically vector design tools in PowerPoint and they've gotten really good. We use them all the time.
They're like the Pathfinder tools in Adobe.
Yeah, but like the really old ones, like the when they started. Now right. Pathfinder tools are amazing. But these ones are incredibly useful. And Sandy, I've seen some of your work where you're creating icons directly in PowerPoint and you can actually export them out in, vector format.
Right. You actually helped me with that. I didn't understand the process for exporting and then importing into Illustrator and Photoshop. So great process to end up with.
Yeah, if somebody's not using them, they're definitely missing a big feature that's been added in.
Our last segment, pro tips. So now we're going to open it up to anything we find cool. My cool thing this week is iSkySoft Media Converter. This is my no-frills go-to program for video editing. Not true video editing like you do in Final Cut or other programs, but because I'm not really a video guy, but this is a small, very easy-to-use drag-and-drop program for downsampling, converting from one format to another, cropping, combining video clips, cutting little bits of video out. And it's just great. It's on Windows, on the Mac. iSkySoft has a whole bunch of tools, but this is the one I use mostly when I have a MOV and I need to change it to a WMV or to an MP4, reduce the size from 100 megs down to 20. It's great with all that. A lot of presets. So that's, I use that all the time.
Presets are awesome in a lot of these programs, and my default is usually the more complex ones, so I'll have to check this one out.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a video and you want to like put it on your iPad, you just literally select your version of the iPad, and that's a preset, and you hit go, and it converts it in the most optimal format for that device.
My tech tip is the one I mentioned earlier. I'm just going to stick with the theme here. I like Snagit. It's one of the greatest apps available, in my opinion. If you have not used it, you just cannot know what you're missing, because it is a screen capture program. And Windows and the Mac OS and Office and everybody has one built in, but it does so much more. You can grab things, but then you can put notations, put arrows. It has a whole interface there. But here's my favorite one use for it. This is actually the thing that got me to purchase it and use it the very first time. We're doing, I was doing website work, and I had to show in an email the web page, you know, with, you know, I wanted to comment on it. Here's where we're looking at the snap. But, you know, the problem is a web page is, you know, there's above the fold what you can see and below the fold, the part you can't see. So, you know, you're doing multiple screen captures, then you're putting them together in Photoshop and creating a JPEG. In Snagit, go to a web page. Everybody should try this. It's a free trial. Go to a web page that's really long. Hit the Snagit, which is usually just print screen. There's a little arrow at the bottom. Click it. It will scroll all the way down to the bottom of the web page and give you a single JPEG of the whole thing. So again, if you don't use it, you know what you're missing. If you ever go to my blog, which I would appreciate, virtually every image in there is created or optimized with Snagit. It's just faster than Photoshop for that type of work. So my tech tip right there.
Okay, well, I forgot about that scrolling feature in Snagit. You're right. That is key. Other than that, I will reiterate that I really like using the Windows snipping tool for those quick screen grabs that I need to make. But I have to add that the Steve Rinsberg with PPT Tools, he offers a free starter set of add-ins, and included on that is his hammer tool. And that hammer tool allows me to do fast positioning of objects on a slide. It's just amazing.
It's awesome. Now, because I've used it, and I know his thing is it's a hammer because you're nailing things into position. Is it a two-part one where you pick it up and you use a different tool to position it, or is it the same tool? I don't remember.
There's a remember. You have to hit, I think it's called remember tool. So if you have a position on one slide and you want to replicate that position on another slide, then you hit the remember tool, and then you use the hammer tool to position
the second
object.
But the hammer's all there because you're nailing it in position. I think that's just awesome right there.
It's perfect.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a design studio team focused on presentation design. Check us out at www.tlccreative.com and my blog, now in its eighth year, www.thepowerpointblog.com. Thanks for joining us for the podcast.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. Subscribe for lots of free downloads and goodies. If your organization is interested in on-site presentation or data visualization training, drop me a line or go to nolanhamescreative.com.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website at presentationwhiz.biz and my blog at pptwizblog, or just search for Sandra Johnson PowerPoint in your web browser and you'll learn all kinds of things about me.
For today's episode, show notes, links, and more, visit us at our website, thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website. If you like us, rate us and leave us a review on iTunes. It's always appreciated. You could contact us with show suggestions, questions for the host, or leave a comment at our podcast website. Look for new episodes every first and third Tuesday of each month.